I am privileged to have as my guest today, Juanita Dilworth Johnson, a classmate, or shall I say a schoolmate of mine back in the day. I'm so happy to have the privilege of reuniting with you, Juanita, after so many years. How are you doing, and welcome to the show?
Hi, I am fine. I'm fine. I'm glad the preparation for Thanksgiving is over, because it was rather laborious.
Well, good, good, good. How did you enjoy your holiday, Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was beautiful. Just being around family and friends, and it's always great. And I know we went around the table to talk about the things that we were thankful for.
Yeah.
And that was a blessing in itself.
What were a couple of things that you stated, if I'm not being too personal, about your thankfulness?
I'm thankful for my journey in life. I would give nothing for the experience. I just wished I had learned some of the things that I learned later in life. I wish I knew them earlier. And I'm sure that most of us could say the same thing. I'm also grateful that my daughter was very ill earlier, and she's fine. She ended up, accomplishing or doing the things that she wanted to do this holiday season. So her medications are working, and she's doing fine. And I was able to complete a triathlon this year.
Oh, that's
fantastic. So I am fine. I'm blessed.
I should say you are. Praise God. Praise the Lord. You were born in Tennessee. Tell me, you were born in Tennessee. You got a master's degree in nursing. You spent 23 years in hospital administration, 10 years as a nurse educator. You have 2 children, 5 grandchildren, and you're now retired.
Okay. I have 3 grandchilden.
Okay, 3 grandchildren. Don't let me put more
3
on you.
Grandchildren.
Amen. Okay.
Don't give me 5. No. The 3 that I have, that they are truly, they occupy a lot of my time.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Tell me what it was like growing up in Tennessee during the era where you grew up, or when you grew up. What was going on in the world and in your city, the culture, music, and so forth and everything?
Well, I was born in Tennessee. And I had 2 working parents, and we were a part of that. At the age of like 4 or 5, I was in that. My parents decided to migrate to the north, as many parents did.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom and dad migrated to Chicago, and at that time we lived in a place where we called Jewtown, but it's Halstead Street. Near the University of Illinois. And Jewtown, every Sunday, you had merchants just going blocks and blocks, just selling things.
Mm.
And I remember every Sunday, they were, we would go out and they would close their shops, and the kids would go out and we would scavenge for what was left out and what people didn't want.
Mm.
I also remember right below my windows, you had the street corner churches.
Mm.
So they had their guitars and their drums, and they had church. They were shouting and dancing. So we would have that environment outside. It was a very active, vibrant area at that time.
Mm.
And I remember living in a building that was filled with prostitutes.
Wow.
I mean, and the customers would come, and no one would ever say anything inappropriate to me.
Mm.
It was as if, she's a special little gossip. Now I'm thinking, Lord, thank you for protecting me in those days. But we lived where we could, and the building that we lived in, it was a place that was frequent by the women of the night. And and the women were just so pleasant. And they were just all like, everything was strict. You would not know that, you know, a person growing up in that environment, what they did, they bother you, never, yeah. ever.
Now,
and
do
they
you
were
know,
very respectful.
Were you old enough to know what they were doing or what was going
yes,
on?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
I knew that these men were not their husbands, and that they were coming there for short periods of time mm-hmm. and leaving.
Okay.
I said something, and as I get a little older, I kind of knew more and more, but I had an idea of what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in Chicago, during that time, what kind of music dominated that era?
A lot of jazz, and the gospel music was upbeat and shouting, and like James Cleveland and Mahalia Jackson. I mean, it was, I grew up in that period where I remember when I was working at the University of Chicago, Mahalia Jackson came to the emergency room.
Wow.
So it was, Chicago was always an active place. And
yeah.
I remember a lot of people, like actors or whatever, would come through Jewtown or
yeah.
come just to take pictures of this place. Because
yeah.
it was truly something to see. When
yeah.
if you could think of, like, in one block, you may have 15, 20 vendors on the street selling shoes
yeah.
that, I'll give you an example. They would sell these shoes that are extreme, they have brand names on them, and they were polished and shining, and they looked great.
Yeah.
But if it rained outside, you find out that the sole was just cardboard.
Oh, wow. Cut it out.
I kid you not.
Lord have mercy. Wow.
And I remember as a kid, we found a whole box of spats. You know, the white covering that the men would wear over their shoes?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think they're called spats.
Hmm.
Well, anyway, we would play with those and put them on our feet, and we would dance all over the neighborhood. So it was a fun time. Safe. We didn't have to worry about people bothering us or kidnapping us, and you know, we would go out and play for all day and come
yeah.
back, you know,
yeah,
with
now
long whistles.
The name Jewtown had nothing to do with the Jews, all right? It was all African-American set up. Oh no,
the majority of them were Jews.
They
called it Jewtown.
Okay.
But now I think before it disbanded, you have more and more African-Americans and whoever wanted to sell. But during the time that I was there, it was Italians and Jews.
Wow, okay. All right.
The majority of them were.
Yeah.
And down the street was this butcher. It's a place where, I can't remember the name of it, but where it was a slaughterhouse,
huh.
where Chicago slaughterhouse, which was down the street from my house.
Wow.
So it was, and you could smell the aromas
wow.
of the slaughterhouse. So.
Wow, wow. Wow. Well, let me ask you, what was it like growing up a Dilworth? What was the culture
Dilworth,
in the home like? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother, and I have three sisters that my mother adopted when I went when I was getting ready to go to college. So
okay.
I wasn't around them very long, but
yeah.
Because I when I got left college, I got married. So, but I was around them for maybe 1 or 2 years. But
okay.
there were like three girls, and my mother was a single parent at the time. And I think she was classified in the news as the first single African American woman to adopt that number of kids.
Wow.
So she had a big heart for children that were abandoned or up for adoption, but. My childhood was a very strained one, I would say, because I grew up in a home with an alcoholic father
wow.
that was extremely abusive.
Mm.
And I don't ever remember my father ever telling me he loved me
mm-hmm.
nor showing like affection.
Yeah.
I can remember one time I sat on his knee, but it was like I sat on his knee, but I don't remember him embracing me
oh.
or ever saying anything loving or,
yeah.
or compassionate.
Yeah.
And so my mother, I consider her a survivor, and my mom did the best that she could
yeah.
in trying to make our home, comfortable, but my father was abusive, an alcoholic, and a gambler. So very often, you know, he would come home drunk and he'd fall on the couch and say, I was robbed. Every Friday night, he was robbed.
Yeah.
And so he would lose his money. And because he was angry, he would take his anger out on my mom.
Hmm.
She will have cleaned the house and cooked his dinner. Your food is here for you. She was very subservient.
Yeah.
And very, here's your food. And he would take it and throw it against the wall or get ready because I'm going to beat your blank, blank, blank.
Yeah.
And she did nothing to instigate this because she was extremely passive.
Yeah.
And so.
Now that you look back over that.
Uh-huh.
But now that you look back over that, what impact did that have on your life in terms of your dad being an alcoholic and you not having the kind of love given to you by him? You know, the love of the dad is much more significant than the love of the mom, even in the girl's life. But tell me, did it have an impact on you in terms of your relationships?
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm.
When I got married, I told my husband, I said, I can handle anything, but don't ever hit me or don't ever show any physical abuse because I thought I'd have a flashback.
Yeah.
So, but he never did anything like that. But as far as the love aspect, I have never felt love.
Mm.
And that is something that I'm still looking for.
Mm.
I know my mom loved me, but I never felt love.
Wow.
I've never felt. And when I got married, I had expected my husband to love and make me happy. Nobody can make you happy.
Absolutely.
You have to come to the relationship with happiness.
That's right.
You have to come to a relationship fulfilled yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
As one person.
Yeah.
But I came as a needy
as a broken person
that
needed
love. But I was my husband never prepared his plate. He never picked up a dish because I had my mom's mentality. You wait on your husband. I never went and bought expensive things. I would make my own clothes, upholster my furniture. But I didn't want my husband to have bills.
Yeah.
So it was crazy, but it impacts you.
Yeah.
You know, don't ever have a child can never say that their childhood does not, because it does.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned about the necessity of coming into the relationship, marriage or whatever other kind of relationship, bringing kind of a wholeness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that self-love yourself. The unfortunate thing is that you don't learn that in college. You don't learn that if you're not getting it in the home. When you go to college and you graduate with college and graduate school and everything else, you still come out a broken person because, you know, that's not something that's taught.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we have to figure out a way in which we can complete ourselves. And even in becoming a Christian, you know, falling in love with God, there still is that need for that human relationship, you know?
Henry, I agree with you 100%. I feel that my relationship to God has helped to make me a more whole person. I still have a desire to share my life with someone, but I am happy. I am content. I am whole.
Yeah.
For the first time in my life, I can say, you know, I don't need the drama. If someone needs me or wants me, I'm there for you. But I don't have to be affirmed or approved. I have approved myself, and God has approved me by my relationship with Him. And the closer I can look like Him, then I am complete.
Yeah.
The closer I can. But there are people in my life, Henry, that I have to acknowledge them, that have helped to let me see a form of love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we were in Chicago at one period in our lives, my brother and I and my mother, we were homeless, walking the streets of Chicago,
wow.
Homeless. And there was a woman, my mother didn't really know her, but her name was Miss Pearl.
Mm.
And she was, all I remember, she was a big lady.
Mm.
And she had about five kids. She took us into her home. Mm. We all piled in this bed.
Wow.
And we ate what she ate. And, wow. And then she was just loving and kind. Just wow. Loving and kind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she had a major impact. Just let me know that you can show love to anyone. And I was yeah. A little girl, but yeah. I remember that.
That is amazing. I mean, you know, it's amazing what love can do. I mean, I don't care what the situation yeah. is. Love is one of the most, well, I shall say, the most powerful force in the world, man. And I thank God that we have people like that lady who is willing mm-hmm. to show it. We need a little bit more of that. So let me ask you, what motivated you to go to college? I mean, did you have somebody that influenced you, or what motivated you to go to college?
I was the first, and I think I'm still the only college graduate in my family.
Okay.
But when I became a Seventh-day Adventist, became my religion of choice. It wasn't of choice for a while, but my ex introduced me to this faith. But I honestly was at church, and all I knew was I knew a lady that was an LPN, and then that was my sister-in-law.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, I want to be an LPN. I didn't know that I should want to be a nurse, but initially it was an aide. And my mother said, no, you need to just keep the little secretary job you have. You don't need to go to college. You should just keep this little job you have, because at least you're bringing home some money.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, no, I want to be an LPN. So I enrolled in LPN school. But then my pastor's wife, who was an RN, she says, no, honey, you need to become a registered nurse. And then you need to get a master's.
Right.
I said, a what? A master's? And she says, yes, get your LPN, get a degree, become a BSN, then an MSN. I said, wow, I can do that. So that is my encouragement, was Sister Bates
yeah.
In Chicago. And I will never forget her
yeah.
because she was so polished and so poised and so just a wonderful, beautiful person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I got to college, of course, I couldn't afford it. And there's Dr. Hale's daughter, Ruth Hale at the time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stay in the dorm, so I was going to have to drop out of school. She says, oh, no. And her father was the president of the college. She says, oh, no, you're going to stay with us. So from that aspect, I went from, in essence, not knowing a lot, because we grew up somewhat in poverty. And I went to Miss Oakwood, and then I went to her home, and then she had to entertain presidents and dignitaries.
Wow. Yeah.
And I learned how to prepare plates and how to prepare a table and how to cook and how to,
yeah.
I mean, so my life has been ordained, has been structured unknowingly.
Yeah.
God was preparing me.
Yeah.
Preparing yeah. me to be who I am today. And I yeah. love who I am today.
Yeah, and how many people get the privilege to go to college and live in the home of the president of college? I mean, if that's not favor, I don't know how to define favor.
That is truly favor. He loves me.
That's right.
And I think, you know, how could I not love him back?
Yeah.
Because it's just so, you know, where I came from, it was like you don't need to go to college. You know, I had no encouragement.
Yeah.
So anybody out there, if people aren't encouraging you, encourage yourself.
Yeah.
Find someone that you can look up to and be your mentor that's one step ahead of you. Don't have people mentoring you that haven't made accomplishments.
Yeah.
Because where can they take you?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
When I think about these people in my life, they push me
yeah,
and they
good.
Push me. And
that's good.
It's...
You know, I would see you periodically on campus. I think we were there around the same time. And, you know, never did I know what you were going through.
Well,
you know,
there's a pride that you have to, you know, you don't act like, you don't no. look and act like what you're going
absolutely,
through.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah,
but it was rough.
Yeah.
But there was absolutely No, my mother never came to Oakwood. She there was no send off and no, you need to keep this job you have. But my mom did what she could do, what she was taught to do. How she, because her mother didn't show her, her that kind of relationship,
Now,
didn't have that kind of relationship.
did you stay in the dormitory at all, or were you there at Frank Hale's house for the entire time?
No, I did stay in the dorm. I arrived in January, and I stayed from January to June because I couldn't get there in September. But I did. I was there in January, so no, I stayed there 2 semesters
Okay,
in the dorm.
so you finished the school, Oakwood, right?
No, I did not.
Oh, you did
They
not.
did. I wanted to go into nursing, so they didn't really have a nursing program.
Right.
So I had to go to Michigan to finish.
Now, how long were you there at Oakwood? 1 year?
About a year and a half.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Interesting. Okay. So you went to get your grad school, and you got your M.S.N. And you became a hospital administrator. What was that? What was that about? What was that like? And tell us a little.
My major focus was often performance improvement. Every department in the hospital, I had to help them establish performance measures. That means what you do the best. How well are you doing that? So we ha I taught them how to measure, how to analyze data, and how to measure their performance. And cut and especially with customer satisfaction involved.
Jesus
And
Christ.
I also coordinate and facilitated all regulatory agency surveys. So if Joint Commission came, I had to get the hospital prepared for that, the entire hospital. And if the Board of Health, arrived, I would have to facilitate that and make sure they got all the documents they need or whatever. But I did a lot of education as it relates to performance improvement. Case management and was also my latter 10 year, my latter 8 years, I'd say. I was a director of case management, performance improvement, and regulatory agencies. So it was quite interesting. I love my heart though is education. I love teaching nurses how to take pride in what they do.
Well, your job description in terms of what you did resembles very, very much what my wife does. My wife, she taught doctors from all over the world how to do robotic surgery. That was one of the areas where she really excelled in. And then she now she's in Nesbitt, doing basically the same thing you're doing, making sure that the doctors don't get away with murder. Because doctors have been gods, I mean, no accountability.
Well, they are being dethroned if you haven't noticed lately. And that was part of my job too. It's called peer review. And I would make sure that that process was seamless, where the physician's performance was also measured. And so any incident or case that occurred in the hospital, it would come to I would know about that. And I would, and I would present, that would be presented at peer review. And so I would facilitate that.
Well, that's dynamite. I mean, I can understand the language because, I'm here with a person who's involved in the very same thing. You said Joint Commission comes. They just had one at the hospital the other day. And so yeah, that's good. So I would assume that you're growing up into maturity in that kind of leadership position has really done a lot to your maturity, hasn't it?
Oh, yes, it has. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, tell me, what? Give me a highlight. One of the highlights in your life. One or two.
Well, the most recent one, which may sound kind of, is the most recent. I have two. My daughter was very ill, and to see her incapacitated, and to see her now you know, traveling to Greece, and she right now she's skiing in Denver, Colorado, with her two kids. So she's doing well. So that is a highlight. That is just a blessing to see your children doing well.
Yeah.
And my son is a comedian, and he's a full time comedian. At first he was a radio broadcaster in Chicago for Vocalore, but now he's a full time comedian. But most recently, I have been preparing my dog to be a therapy dog for almost a year now. And when we moved here where we are now, we couldn't get surveyed, we couldn't get evaluated. And anyway, so he was finally evaluated as a therapy dog. And he can now go to hospitals, schools, nursing homes, and provide comfort to people who are depressed or have disabilities. And I took him on his first assignment a couple of weeks ago. And just to watch the facial expressions of the people who just, their faces lit up, they came out of their rooms. It was just beautiful just to see the impact that this dog's presence had on them.
Well, let me just jump in a second. You sent me a picture of that dog last week. And yeah. there's no way in the world his presence was not impacted. that dog is big as a horse almost. And looking at you stately with a human personality, the way his eyes was looking at, you know, in that picture. So I can understand how he arrests the attention of people. But go ahead.
They want pictures of him. They want to just hold on to him. It was just, and he's just as gentle as a lamb.
That's great.
He doesn't have an aggressive bone in his body, although he's huge.
Yeah, he is huge. That's good. That's great. That's great. Tell me, what do you have any defining moments, a defining moment, like a moment that's caused an aha or paradigm shift, a defining moment? I should have maybe asked you this early on before the interview so you'd have an opportunity to think about it. But if you don't, I'll move on to the next.
I'll think about that. Yeah, let me give that
critical choices, a critical choice, which could have been a bad choice or a good choice, a critical choice.
Well, the most recent one occurred about 6 months ago, where I had more of a dependent, relationship on my ex, with my ex, whereas I depended upon, because I admire his mind and his, you know, and his thought process, and he's up on everything. And it's like, and so I used to find myself needing validation by him. I can't remember anything that I did that I felt was good enough or, you know, that was, even when I got my master's, there was nothing. But anyway, I learned at this age, and I get so angry with myself because I've wasted so much time. I don't need anyone to validate
me.
And I need to validate myself. And that's what I have been doing since like last May or April or May. And it's like, okay, you're at a space now, be grateful. You're retired, you're comfortable, and you've been blessed by God. You don't need to be validated. That the what I have to share and the information from my perspective, my viewpoints are just as valid as yours.
Yeah.
You know, my positions are just as interesting as yours. And I don't put anyone anymore on a pedestal.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't belong there.
No, they don't.
You know, yeah. They don't. They don't belong there. And the closer I have gotten with Christ, and that has been unbelievable changing for me. I have always been, I've never like left the church and went wild and got drunk. And I've never done that. But I didn't have that relationship that I have now. And now I have this relationship. And that is what's the most important thing. I have someone who loves me the way I am. He made me as crazy as I am. He made me just the way I am. Because I'm a very funny person. But, and he made me. There's no one in this world, Henry. Nobody like me.
Well, I tell you, I want to let you know that in the midst of the validation and needing to, you know, have that feeling of self-worth, you're not going to find many people who have been where you've been in life. I mean, the hospital administration and the teaching of nurses, that's that those are very the domain there, you know, the domination of a craft where you can have that kind of authority over the minds of people is an accomplishment that very few people ever get a chance to enjoy. So, you know, just I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but just rehearse where God has taken you in terms of your accomplishments in life. And I tell you, some people cannot even begin to imagine, you know, the levels that you have accomplished. So I'm thankful just from hearing it. I'm impressed and I'm inspired how God has, you know, blessed you in your life, your journey.
And I tell people all the time, if he can do it for me, he can do it for you. There are no limits to what we can accomplish if we stop looking in the mirror.
Yeah, that's right.
And stop listening to people.
Absolutely.
So you got to get outside of yourself.
Yeah.
And you've got to love yourself so much to realize that you are worth it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you are worth it.
Yeah.
And you are important. And I think the sooner you learn that, the happier you'll be. And the contentment is just, I just can't thank God enough for to wake up content and to be able to laugh at yourself and to smile and to be happy.
That's great.
I don't need anyone to make me happy.
There you go.
I don't need anyone to have a laughing party in this house.
Yeah.
And to really enjoy Henry, I enjoy being with me.
Yeah, good, good, good.
I really enjoy my people. I love being around people.
Yeah.
But I can be happy with me.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful.
That's an accomplishment.
That is.
If you had one thing to do over again, or if there's something that you did not, if you had life to live over again, what would you do differently?
I think what I would have done differently is waited. I would not have gotten married so young.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't young, though. I was 24 years old.
Okay.
That's not young. But for me, who lived I lived an extremely sheltered life.
Yeah.
I grew up, the religion was Kojic, and I don't know if you know anything about that, but it is extremely, during the age when I grew up, Kojic.
Yeah.
When I grew up, you couldn't wear pants, your clothes had to be below, your sleeve had to be below your elbow, and your dress has to be below your knee. You could not say certain, you couldn't use the word lie in your house. You couldn't go to parties. You go to games. I lived an extremely sheltered life.
Yeah.
In an environment that was not filled with love.
Mm.
So when I got married, even though I was 24, I was an immature 24.
Yeah.
You have some kids that are mature at 18 and 16. But I was an immature. At the age, I still didn't know anything about, and I'm going to say this, because in those days, your parents, my parents from the South, did not, children are to be seen but not heard.
Right.
And you when a young girl is going through her menstrual cycle, you know, you need guidance.
Yeah.
And when my daughter, I remembered, no one ever told me. I didn't know what was happening to me.
Wow, Wow.
And I thought babies came out of the from literal stalks on the chimneys when I was 11 and 12. I mean, that is compared to what kids know now at 8 and 7 and
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So I was extremely immature. So I should have waited and not, you know, and at least not married on your senior year in college. I should have gotten out, been on my own for a year or so.
That's hindsight, you know, because of where you are now. But thank God. I mean, you know, I'm glad for this this interview, because again, there will be people listening to this show today who really, you were very honest, you were very transparent. And I think it's a transparency and honesty that does the most good for people. Sometimes we try to hide who we really are, want to put the best foot forward so people won't think badly of us. But I want to thank you for this interview today, Juanita. I'm going to have you back on the show again. Doesn't necessarily have to be an interview, but to share some of the knowledge that God has gifted you with throughout the years.
Sounds great. I enjoyed myself. And thank you so much for the invitation, Henry.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. More than welcome. More than welcome. And I will be in touch with you very soon. God bless you,
Wendy. Okay. God bless you too. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh.